When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. So I launched a new thing, a new audio project, and it's been something that I have been playing with and evaluating it, what it's going to be for a long time. And that's the Comics Are Great podcast, and that's at my personal website, comicsaregreat.com. And without going into too much about it, I just wanted to make a mention of it here. It's going to be different than Art and Story, partially because Art and Story is servicing its listeners to the best of its ability. You know, we got a lot of different types of listeners, and different listeners want different things. Some people say, well, we like the really casual episodes where you guys just discuss a topic in a very loose way, not looking for an answer at the end. And then there's other people who send us emails saying, boy, you know, I wish your episodes were more structured, like the Comics from the Ground Up series, where you give us this kind of step-by-step approach to things. And that's what happens when you start to develop a large constituency. And we, Mark, Kevin, and I often discuss the format and topics for the show. Of course we do. We'd have to. And one of the things we always keep our eye on is it fun for us? Because the moment it stops being fun for us, it's not going to be fun for anybody. So yes, we do listen to all input and all comments and requests, and we measure that. I mean, I'm going to quote Richard Feynman again and say, you hold up what other people say to what you know to be true, and if they don't meet up, well, then that's that. That was in one of his books. It was a quote by Richard Feynman, the great physicist. And I thought that, I think that's an essential truth of being a human, which will lead into the topic for today. But anyway, comics are great. What this is going to be is it's just going to be an experiment. I have no ambition to make this a weekly or, you know, any kind of regularly updating show. It's going to be something I do when I have the time. You know, I spend a good amount of time on the phone. When I say good amount of time, I just mean I'm on the phone on a regular basis with my peers, and we have lots of really good conversations, just like Mark and I did before we started Art and Story. And it occurred to me that some of these conversations are really interesting to me, and why not document them? And so the Comics Are Great show will be different from Art and Story in the sense that my intention is not to create a bullet-pointed list or a series of steps to do anything. Neither is it something where personality is going to necessarily drive it, although I guess my personality will to an extent because I'm going to be the regular feature on there. But it's just going to be eavesdropping on the kinds of conversations that I have with people that I like talking to. That's really the vision. And so it's something I'm doing just for the pure fun of it. It is not in any way, I don't think, going to compete with what I'm already doing. This is where I go back to an early Thunder Punch Daily, where I was talking about cannibalizing your own audience. Because it's irregular, because it's only it's going to be a hobby of mine, I don't think it's going to step on the toes of anything I'm doing with Art and Story. It's not meant to, at any rate. And but there will be crossover, of course. And also, you know, Art and Story, I think, tends to speak to a broader vision of visual storytelling. But my focus is always going to be on comics, and doing a show like Comics Are Great means that I have the latitude to just focus on why I think comics are so great, and I don't have to necessarily apologize or make allowances for the crossover in any other field. That's up to the listeners to decide what the crossover is. And that's another thing I like about it, is that one of my goals with it is to inspire critical thinking. Now let's talk about critical thinking. There was my segue into today's topic. It's funny how life works, that I've been having a lot of conversations lately with friends, and it all has kind of revolved around something that I think is crucial to becoming a better cartoonist or a better person, better artist in general, at least by the standards that we tend to admire in the West. without going into too much detail, I'm going to point people at Joseph Campbell. Once again, yes, I like Campbell. I think he writes really interesting things. I don't think he's some kind of demigod who we should just interpret his teachings as some kind of spiritual text. But I think he has a lot of interesting insights on mythology and how that ties into human nature and how that ties into storytelling. So I think his books are good to read for that. Myths to Live By is a collection of his essays that I really like. Hero with a Thousand Faces is his seminal text, the one that everybody points to. The Power of Myth, the interview with Bill Moyers, you know, that's okay. It's pretty good. That's a lot of people's inroads to Campbell. But I think going straight to the source and going to Campbell's lectures and essays are the best place to start because he says a lot of really cool stuff there without being interrupted by Bill Moyers asking a bunch of weird questions. So anyway, Campbell highlights in some of his essays, especially when he starts talking about the difference between the Orient and the Occident, is that traditionally in the East, like in India, you have the tradition of the yogi and the guru. The same thing is in a lot of Buddhist texts and Buddhist teachings of, you know, you look at the martial school of the Zen where you have the Zen master and you're meditating. The Zen master's walking behind you back and forth, and then he hits you with a switch and you bow that the master has reminded you with this strike on your back that you should be attentive at all times in your meditations. And same thing in the Eastern philosophies of traditional philosophies of India, where you have the guru, and the guru is the person you are supposed to emulate. This is your God, as it were, and you are supposed to interpret all their teachings as absolute truth. And there's a lot of reasons for this, because of these traditions come from orally handed down traditions, and before, you know, pre-text traditions meant that there was no interpretation. It was verbatim, word by word, and a lot of other reasons that I won't go into here. But anyway, to point back at the West, one of the things that I cherish about the traditions that I come from is this sense of inspiring critical thinking. In other words, my students are not meant to emulate me. I am meant to present them with a fleet of options and inspire them with my fascination and enthusiasm for the craft, and show and give them my experiences to show them what I've learned and inspire them to think beyond what I've done and internalize what I teach so that they can go and find their own path. You know, and this is another thing Campbell talks about in the Grail legend of the Arthurian myths, is that when either Galahad or Gawain, I can't remember, says, "I propose we each go off in quest and we should go into the forest adventurous," and they thought it would be dishonorable to go off in a group. Each went on their own way in the darkest point where there was no way or path, because where there's a path, it's somebody else's path. Right, the road less traveled, and all that stuff. You know, I know I'm preaching platitudes here, and I'm probably preaching to the choir, but let's get a little bit more specific than critical thinking. And I'm going to point to a behavior that I notice a lot of people in our field fall victim to, that I think actually works against critical thinking. And this is where I come back and rail once again on this idea of celebrity and hero worship. It may sound funny to come from me as somebody who really admires heroic stories and tales of heroism, and I really admire the heroic ideal character, but I understand when I talk about them that I'm talking about a symbol here. I'm not talking about a real person. I'm not talking. And when I say what would He-Man do, I know I'm not talking about a real guy. I understand the maybe not irony, but cognitive dissonance that's going on there, and I've reconciled that. I'm looking at him as an ideal that I can never reach, but it's an ideal that reminds me of what a good set of ethics are, so I can moderate my behavior and become a little bit more of a consistent human being. But to admire somebody wholesale and look at somebody as a some kind of final word on a field subject or even a scene, it works against critical thinking, because it supposes, one, that they are something or someone that you just cannot be, which I think is absolutely preposterous, or at least fatalistic. It supposes that they've got something that you don't. And often that something that they've got that you don't can be luck. It can be a little bit of extra panache. It can be maybe skill. But skills can be learned, as can panache, as can sort of like a certain zest, that a zeal or a flair that you've got about yourself. That's something you can pick up with time if you have enough self-reflection and a deep honesty and understanding with why you do what you do, why you're doing this thing. And it doesn't come out of emulation. I really don't think it does. Although emulation becomes important in terms of, gosh, I'm really just talking about psychology today, aren't I? But I'm really getting to my point here, slowly, but I'm building here. But emulation works in a way of role-playing, to assume a role, to test out different ways of thinking and acting to see who the heck you are. But really, most of that we figured out, or at least we should have figured out, before the age of 25. Although there's a little bit of that that goes on afterwards, at least in my own experience. But I was having a conversation with a friend of mine recently about how in the arts, in entertainment, you come up against little high school-ish cliques. And for those who don't know what a clique is just a little social group of people who have defined themselves as such a group, either through action or through words, sometimes both, often through both, to the exclusion of other people. We are the in crowd. Anybody who's not in the in crowd, anybody who's not initiated is not part of this. I really don't think this has any place in the 21st century artistic communities. I think that as a teacher who tries to inspire critical thinking, yes, I am there as an authority on the subject. I'm there as a leader on the subject, but I'm not there as the master of the subject, and currying my favor doesn't put you in any kind of elite group. I do my very best to treat every student equally to their own idiosyncratic needs. But there's no teacher's pet. There's no special elite group. There's no initiates or anything like that. And I think in dealing with others, we shouldn't behave that way either, of course. But it just happens. Some people, for whatever reason, seem to like that kind of high school-ish mentality of saying we're the in crowd and you're not in that crowd. And without going into too much of a motherly kind of, well, if they don't like you, son, it's just their loss. I don't want to do that to you guys, because you guys are smarter than that. You know that. But it still stings sometimes when we feel that we've been snubbed by somebody who's bought into their own sense of hype or their own sense of fame or their own the whatever clout they feel they have in a clique. And I think it only feeds that kind of behavior when we worship other artists, cartoonists, creators, when we look up to them to the point of thinking that they could do no wrong. I told this story, I think, recently, not too long ago anyway, on an Art and Story Extreme. I think it was on one of the Supreme ones. I was at a comics event with some local cartoonists, and somebody there was talking about some cartoonists that I knew. And they said, boy, I just can't wait to meet those people because they're like comics royalty. Now, I know these people that this person was talking about, and they're very nice people, very plugged in and cool people and interesting to talk to. And yes, they've experienced some degrees of success, and congratulations to them. I'm happy for them, and I have done stuff on my own part to try to enhance that success as best I can. I want them to be successful. But does that success make them royalty? What does that even mean? It means to this person, and this is the vibe I picked up by talking to this person a little bit more about it, was that if I just got in with them, if I just got them to notice me, appreciate me, let me into their group, then I will have made it. Here's another flaw in this thinking, is what does made it even mean? If the internet proposes an age when everybody has a chance to experience success, then the word success has been extended, broadened over everybody. It is not something where there's a limited supply of success. Yes, if you're talking about super uber success, being the number one in the entire world, being a Google, for instance, then yes, success is a limited thing. But is that really what we're going for here? I thought that one of the reasons we choose to be independent cartoonists is to be as niche as we want to be our true selves as much as we want to be, speak to as small an audience as we want to be, and experience success on a smaller but sustainable scale. In that situation, success means a lot of things. It doesn't mean that there's a limited amount. And furthermore, it dehumanizes the person that you're worshiping a little bit by acting like there's some kind of, heavenly ordained tastemaker. And also, it's a bit of an artificial and superficial way to think about communication, community, and friendship of, well, I just have to curry their favor. What are we living in a Jane Austen novel now, where we have to go to the right parties and meet the right people in order to get into the right social circle so that we can marry the right person? That sounds like a very unfulfilling life, and usually, at least in Jane Austen's novels, that point is explored about how unfulfilling that is, and the romances and loves that are experienced are usually cross-class. But anyway, all of this points to a non-critical thinking. Critical thinking means that you think for yourself. You operate out of self-responsible action, and you are operating out of a center that exists within you, independent of other people. You don't need the favor of other people to know that you're doing something good. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't crave community and you don't crave socializing. It just means that you crave it on your own terms, and that you don't want to have to kowtow or behave in some kind of different way in order to get into the right crowd. So what I'm trying to drive at here is that, yes, morally and ethically, we have, most of us, have at least a gut reaction understanding of why worshiping celebrity or celebritizing our fellow cartoonists is a bad idea. But it goes deeper than that, I think. It also speaks to this kind of ethic that I highlighted earlier of the East, of treating your guru as the master who you just simply emulate without any kind of critical thinking whatsoever. Before I go on any further, I want to make sure everybody understands that I'm not placing a value judgment on that. Yes, I sympathize more with Western values, but I do see the value of Eastern philosophies as well. I think they're absolutely fascinating, and Zen is pretty darn cool. But there are some things that I disagree with about the philosophy fundamentally for myself. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be a Zen Buddhist. Anyway, but like I was highlighting with that is like this kind of like worshiping of the guru means that there's a disappearing of your own ego. There's a disappearing of your own self. Well, that negates self-responsible action. That negates critical thinking. And if we do indeed value critical thinking, if we do indeed value making our own choices, then I think we should be extra careful, extra wary of looking up in an undue fashion to our fellow cartoonists. We can respect them, but respect is a very different thing than worship. Respect means that you will deal with them in a certain degree of deference. You're not going to be disrespectful, right? I'm losing my control of words here today. But worship means that you absolutely debase yourself in front of them. You know, this is the person you go up to and like, oh, I can't even talk. I'm just in such awe of your presence. Nothing creeps me out more than seeing other people behave that way. That's embarrassing to them, and it's embarrassing to the creator. And this friend I'm talking about, who inspired this conversation, they are not a person who does this, but they are a person who was recently treated in a somewhat less than respectful fashion by a group of people who were acting in a clique. We're going to run into that, and it's going to sting in a way. But ultimately, I think it's upon us to remember why we're doing what we're doing, not in a sort of sour grapes justifying our own existence way, but it's a way of centering ourselves again to remember that it doesn't matter if people act that way. And even if they are a successful group of people who are encouraging that kind of worship about themselves, what bearing does that have on anything that we're doing? We're making comics because comics are really cool. Comics are great, as a matter of fact. Now, every time I say that, it's going to sound like an advertisement for myself. But that's why we do it, and not to win the favor of other people, although we all understand that we crave attention and appreciation for what we do. Otherwise, why else would we share it? But the initial inspiration has to come from within. Otherwise, there's no point in going on. I know this sounded like a pep talk this time, and I really wasn't going to go here. I had this one written down in a notebook for a potential subject. But then I decided, nobody wants to hear me preach about this. But you know what? The fact that this keeps popping up amongst my friends, and the fact that Renee Van Belsen recently posted, or just today, posted a couple tweets about the importance of critical thinking, it just shows that we come up against this all the time. And I think for that reason, it should be repeated every once in a while, even if it's a platitude, even if I'm preaching to the choir. There's a value in preaching to the choir because it keeps us motivated, keeps us fired up, and keeps us reminded of why we do what we do. Okay, I'm done. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We really couldn't do it without you. It means a lot. And I'll get out of here quick after that. I mean, really, just a heartfelt thank you. And I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
In today's story, Skeletor was looking for a shortcut, a quick way to riches and power. You may know some people like that, always looking for the quick way to get ahead of everybody else. Well, it doesn't work that way. The people who succeed are the ones who work for what they want. So don't be fooled by those who say they have a sure thing. There's always a catch to it. Don't sell yourself short. The right way is the best way. Until later.